This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 206, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 180 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Malcolm Robinson about his book, UFO Case Files of Scotland, Volume 3. Malcolm is the author of 10 books on UFOs and the paranormal. He went down to the depths of Loch Ness in a submarine in 1994. He has assisted television and radio stations all over the world with info on UFOs and the paranormal. He founded the group Strange Phenomena Investigations in Scotland in 1979, making it Scotland's oldest and still going UFO paranormal society, with members all over the world. Hi Malcolm, thanks for coming back to the podcast.
It's great to be back on your show, Simon. It's always nice to have a chat with you about all things weird and wonderful.
We're going to talk about your book. It's called UFO Case Files of Scotland, Volume 3. There's obviously been a lot of stuff going on in Scotland to get to a Volume 3. How have you seen the sightings in Scotland evolve over time? Have you seen any patterns?
There are always patterns in regards to UFO sightings. But there is more of the kind of large black triangular craft that's being sighted in the Scottish skies. You mentioned about the book there. Yeah, I mean, how that evolved technically was, over the years, you know, many, many people have been sharing their stories with me. And I've said on your show the last time, what am I to do with these stories, you know, put them away in a filing cabinet, lock the key and keep them there forever? Absolutely not. These stories have got to go out. So when I looked at my computer and all the folders, I went, really? Have I really got all these files on UFO case files in Scotland? So needless to say, that deserved a book of its own. And the beauty of it, Simon, is the next volume will be, you know, I've got enough material for a further volume, such is the wealth of data that I've gathered, but that wasn't gathered over 10 weeks, 12 weeks, 45 years. So there's a lot of stuff to go through. And so obviously the UFO Case Files of Scotland Volume 3 sees a number of puzzling cases and also updates on two major Scottish cases that has been featured in my previous books. Like any given UFO case, there's always things to update. You know, new evidence comes forward. It's, in a sense, it's like a police cold case file, you know. As the years roll by, somebody will come up and say, hey, I was there when that happened. I saw something. And that you wish that you had have had those details with the original book. I mean, Decmont Woods, it would have been lovely to get these new stories in. But the good thing about it is I can at least do a chapter on updates on the Decmont case and get them out to the public, yeah.
And of course, you've got all sorts of things happening there. It's not just sightings. There's abductions and there's close encounters of the second kind, third kind, fourth. You know, you might say that Scotland's a small country, but there's still a lot going on there.
Well, very much so. I mean, Scotland as a nation has been touched by the UFO presence like a number of other countries worldwide. And it's all about people being honest and upfront and coming clean and putting their hands up and saying, yep, okay, I'm going to get this off my chest. I'm going to tell, if not myself, other, you know, members of the Scottish UFO community. And that's the beauty of it. And I've said before on your show, for every one person who comes forward and says, I saw something, how many people who was with that person will not come forward through fear of ridicule? So whilst there's a lot of cases in Scotland, and I dare say England and the rest of the world, anybody with a bit of common sense must ask the question, I wonder how many more cases are out there that we'll never, ever know, because people just don't want to come forward for fear of ridicule. And that's something we have to bear in mind. And the same would apply, obviously, to cases of poltergeists and poltergeists, Nessie, Sasquatch, a number of things, paranormal. People don't always come forward. And it's all about when you do come forward, we got to talk to them. We've got to get that information out because it's a big jigsaw. People are seeing a lot of strange stuff. And anybody that reads UFO Case Files of Scotland may say, you know what? I saw the exact same thing in Birmingham or Swansea or Colchester or wherever it may be. And that adds to the bigger picture because you start talking to those other witnesses who claim to have seen the same thing and you try and nest it all together and say, well, what exactly did you see? You know, and it helps build the bigger picture. It's a fantastic subject to be involved with.
And I think it's great you're putting these books out with all this information because I've twice seen a UFO, once was really close up, but I didn't report it to anyone. There was a feeling of, well, what for, really? It'll just probably go into a filing cabinet and that'll be the end of it.
Yeah, and that's the very thing that I'm saying, you know. And you can blame people. I'm not having a dig at people who have seen things and don't come forward. I mean, it's that individual's choice, just like yourself. Some people may say, well, who actually do you turn to? Not everybody knows that there are UFO societies out there. You know, the man in the street, he goes to his work, he goes to the pub, he goes home to his wife, he puts his feet up in front of the telly. He may not know that there's societies out there dealing with this stuff. Unless, of course, he maybe jumps on the internet and just does a search. But in the main, people don't know who to go to. And so those cases go unreported.
And you founded the SPI, didn't you? And so people can report to you.
Yeah, way back when. That was way back in November 1979. And I mean, I was always interested in this stuff way before then, Simon. But it was after the famous Deckmont Woods case with Bob Taylor. I went, you know what? I've got to do my own stuff. I've got to see and search for other like-minded people in Scotland. And so I formed the SPI and we started to get people together, the likes of Ron Halliday and various other researchers. And we all grouped together and we started our merry way through this wonderful subject. So we're still doing it. Do I have all the answers? Probably not. I've got plenty of speculations. But it's just a wonderful, wonderful journey. And obviously doing podcasts with people like your good self and sharing that knowledge. And if people think Malcolm Robinson is off his head, so be it. So be it, you know. People, when you look at some of these documentaries on television, the witness will say, I don't care what anybody says about my sighting. They were not there. I was. And that speaks volumes. That does speak volumes.
So you've mentioned the Deckmont Woods UFO incident a couple of times there. So I wanted to talk to you about the updates you've got, but could you tell the listeners who don't know what happened with this case?
Well, as a very, very big case, of course, and I'll try and be very brief, which is very difficult for me. 1979, November the 9th, forestry worker Robert Taylor was employed by the Livingston Development Corporation in the Forestry Department. Now, Bob, prior to this job, he was a war hero. He fought over in France. He went over to France in D-Day 5 to help liberate France from the Germans. And he actually helped liberate Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. And so he was a war hero, you know, and he settled back in Scotland after the war. Like many people, we had no interest in UFOs. But all that changed on that November morning, November 9th. He jumped in his pickup truck up to Deckmont Woods near Livingston. And Livingston is a small town in the central belt of Scotland. And it's about 10 miles or so away from Edinburgh. And in the journey on the pickup truck was his dog, Lara. He parked up. Then he jumped out the truck with his dog, Lara, and he walked down this forestry path, which had trees to the left, trees to the right. A journey and a walk that he's done many, many times before. However, on this morning, all that changed. He was suddenly catapulted into the twilight zone. He came upon a clearing and there, about 10, 12, 13 feet above the grass, was this large dome-shaped craft with a flange going around its perimeter, cross-light projections sticking up from the flange, and then it was disappearing and reappearing. And you know, you could see the young trees in the background when it disappeared, and then it would solidify again. His dogs barking wildly beside him, and then suddenly what resembled two Second World War sea mines. Those spherical balls with the spikes descended from beneath the object, impacted on the grass, rolled across the grass, stopped, and extended these rod-like projections towards his person, grabbing him forcibly at the hips and lifting him up forcibly into the air. His trousers were torn at this point, and he remembers a terrible smell pervading the area, and he lost consciousness. When he regained consciousness, the larger object was gone, the smaller objects were gone. There was over 40 marks in the grass and two ladder-like marks in the grass as well. He had a nasty graze under his chin, a graze on his forehead. He had a pounding headache. He had a terrible thirst. And he went back to his truck to radio base, but he found that he had lost his voice. And he somehow managed to reverse his truck into a small, shallow ditch. So you can imagine the back wheels are spinning. He couldn't get out of the ditch. He staggered back home to his wife, and his wife then phoned for the doctor. The doctor attended the family dwelling, did all the necessary tests, saw that his heartbeat was elevated, etc. The police were called because it was deemed an assault by person or persons unknown. The police went up to Deckmont Woods. They fenced off the area. They could see the marks in the grass, and they treated it very seriously. It's the only case in the British Isles. It's been heavily involved with the police, but not just that. The forensic department as well, because Bob Taylor's trousers, as I mentioned, they were ripped. They were tested at the Police Scotland headquarters in Edinburgh, and the chief forensic scientist, Lester Nibb, said that these trousers were ripped in an upwards manner. They were not caused by any forest debris or sharp stones or sharp twigs or anything like that. I've only scratched the surface on that case. It was a massive case. We have found out that there were UFO sightings a week or so prior to November the 9th and a few days afterwards. And once the book came out, typically people started saying, oh, here, I saw something as well. And that's when you wish you could have had those stories to pad that book out. But because the good thing is people were coming forward with updates on that, and I decided to have a full chapter in my latest book, The Case Files of Scotland, Volume 3, where I dedicate all the new information on Deckmont in this chapter. I mean, some crazy, crazy stuff. For instance, one young girl claimed that she had bunked off school with her friends that day and went up to Deckmont Woods. And she claimed she actually saw the whole incident. Now, how bizarre is that? You know, and again, we're dealing with a witness testimony. She was a young girl at the time. She's in her 50s now, or 60s, I should say. And it makes one wonder if she's being honest. But when I interviewed her, she seemed honest. She really did, you know. And another gentleman who, obviously, when he was younger, he was about 10 or 11, and he went up to Deckmont Woods a few days later, and he couldn't believe it was swarming with military personnel, people with fatigues on and caps, you know, those kind of soft berry caps. And he was told to leave Deckmont Woods in no uncertain terms. So again, you ask yourself, what was that all about, you know? And these stories and many others I felt had to go in the book. One pretty bizarre case that came from Deckmont Woods was the Dog Man. And basically what happened there, Simon, was this was a young man. When I say young man, he was in his 20s, I believe. Along with his friend, they were walking their dogs into Deckmont Woods. Now, admittedly, it wasn't the area where Bob Taylor saw his UFO in 79. It was at the start of Deckmont Woods, which is still heavily wooded. So of an evening, they're walking, these two men with their dogs, they're walking into Deckmont Woods, and the gentleman who saw this strange event that I'm about to inform you about, his name is Mark Wilson, he was walking up and he suddenly saw a flash, like a bright light that just went woof right through the trees, you know, below the tree canopy, so in the forest itself. And they went, what the hell was that? So they walked on about 100 yards or so, and then he was astonished to see that his dogs, these husky dogs, he says, Malcolm, these dogs are not frightened of anything. And suddenly they stopped and they bared their teeth. You know, have you seen dogs baring their teeth? And then he suddenly backed off on their hind legs, walking backwards down the track, snarling. And he went, Jesus Christ, what the hell is this all about? And that's when he saw it. About 10, 15 yards in front of him was this dog-man creature. This creature, it was like it had a snout and glaring red eyes, I believe he said it was, and it looked very evil when it was staring at him. And he went, what the hell is this, you know? And needless to say, he was frightened. Of course he would be. And because he knew this is something not of this earth. What is this? And then suddenly this object just took away and it was gone. Now, the thing we have to remember is this is not an isolated incident. It is for Declan Woods, admittedly, but sightings of this creature, this dog man, is right across the British Isles and across Europe. So when this gentleman came and informed me that this happened in Declan Woods, again, it adds another twist to the story, you know, it makes you wonder, because there are a number of woods across the British Isles, which is a combination of heavily haunted and paranormal woods, Clapham Woods, etc. Various woods have this affinity with the supernatural. Some woods are known for witchcraft, and people's walked into the woods and have found witchcraft signs, the pentacle, etc. And it was just pretty bizarre to see that, you know.
Getting back to Bob Taylor and that original incident, you have his trousers, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. And I have the ripped trousers that Robert Taylor wore in that eventful morning of November the 9th. Once the trousers were analysed by the Police Forensic Society, they were given over to Philip Mantle, a good friend of mine, a fellow researcher. And Philip says, Malcolm, them. I shouldn't have these. This is a Scottish case. You should have them in Scotland. So he quickly dispatched them to me, and I've had them ever since. I take them on, you know, my talks, my lecture tours, and it's great to talk about the story and pass the trousers into the audience where they can feel these. It's a piece of historic, it's a historic artifact from ufology. It's like Christianity. They have the Shroud of Turin. But we have the trousers of Declan, you know.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, is it proof? Well, it backs up the gentleman's story for sure. You know, it backs up his story. And all we can say is it's just great to have them. And it's just a fantastic piece of history.
Do you know how his dog behaved?
His dog, when he regained consciousness, his dog was... you know, relieved that his master was up and about. And skeptics have said, could it have not been his dog that made the marks in the grass? Now, that's a possibility. Having said that, these were circular and triangular impressions with ladder-like marks. These marks were not there before he inspected the woodlands. They were not there. His dog refused to go back into the woods. It went into the woods, yes, but not to that location. That was what I was informed by the family, Bob's family. The dog refused to go back to, which is kind of ironic because, would you believe, the dog is actually buried in Declan Woods. Admittedly, again, not at that location, but further away, further back away in the woods. And which I suppose is fine. You know, it was his favourite haunt before the incident happened. I should mention, by the way, that when we're talking about Bob's ripped trousers, whilst I've got them, you know, what am I going to do when it's my time to pass to the other side? These trousers have got to be handed on. A lot of my files, UFO files and photographs, etc., are going over to Class 1. In Sweden. He has a museum over there, and he has artifacts and books from various British researchers, American, Canadian, Brazilian researchers. And I felt that, you know, when I passed the spirit, rather than all my stuff going in a skip, get them to somewhere where somebody can enjoy them. So what was I going to do with the trousers? Well, I felt that, actually, no, the trousers themselves should remain in Scotland. So I got in touch with the museum, the British Museum in Edinburgh. And I sent them an email and I tried to explain, look, yes, you have a lot of artefacts in there. The Roman times, the Egyptian times, and artefacts has been donated from people. I'd like to donate these trousers. Now, I had to explain all about the story. And I says, yes, it is off the wall. Yes. Yes, it is a bit bizarre, but it's still Scottish history, ufological history. And wouldn't it be great to have that in a cabinet, a glass cabinet with photographs of Bob and a wee statement saying this is what happened, and then displaying the trousers. And they more or less chased me, Simon. They more or less says, no, we're not doing it. And I just can't believe it, you know. And so it made big press up here in Scotland. It was in all of the major Scottish newspapers, and they really kicked the museum, the British Museum, in the backside about this, the Museum of Scotland, I should say. And but to this day, I still feel that they should be in Scotland, be it in a museum or somewhere. And if I can't get that sorted before it's my time to pass over to Spirit, then they may well have to go to Class Fan in Sweden.
One of the updates I wanted to talk to you about was what you did with Stephen Bird and Bob Taylor. Could you briefly tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, what happened there was Stephen Bird is SPI's psychic medium, a wonderful, wonderful, very, very gifted man. I'd stake my life on the guy. He's so incredibly accurate. It's unbelievable. So he was aware of the case, but he didn't know where it was. So we jumped in his car and I was started to give him directions. No, no, don't give me directions. What? What do you mean, don't give you directions? You know it's Dean's near Limerick. Yes, I know that, but I don't know, Malcolm, how to get to the woods. I don't know which turning left or turning right. He says, it doesn't matter anyway. I went, what do you mean? He says, I've got Bob here in the back seat. I went, what? He says, yes, the spirit of Robert Taylor is sitting in the back seat and he's giving me directions. And he drove straight to the place. And I went, my goodness, this is incredible. And so that was interesting. Then he said that Robert Taylor was telling him, the witness in the Dirkmont Woods, the witness was saying, there's, is it silver, he said? No, metal in the trees, or metal in the trees. And we were thinking, is he referring to some form of spaceship or UFO? Or what does this refer to? And he says, Malcolm, he keeps telling me look for the metal in the trees. So long story short, we went up to Dirkmont Woods and we had a look around, and Stephen said his spider senses were tingling. That was his words. And then he shouted me over. He says, Malcolm, come quick, look. And he pointed to this fallen log at the very location where Robert Taylor saw the object in 79. And he pointed to this metal object stuck very firmly in the tree. It was a coin. I think it might have been a 10 pence coin. Now, certainly nothing of ufological interest, you know, not parts of a UFO or anything like that. But I think the story behind this one is, I think Bob was trying to tell us that he was definitely there and looked for this metal in the trees, which turned out to be a coin. So it was evidence of sorts, evidence that somebody, i.e. Robert Taylor, was with Stephen Bird that day, telling him what was there. And so that was quite interesting, you know. Simon, by the way, I should mention that I asked the permission, I shouldn't say this on your show, but I'll say it anyway. I did ask permission from the West Lothian Council to do some metal detecting in Dirkmont Woods, and they refused point blank. I went ahead and done it anyway. I shouldn't be saying this on radio, but I went ahead and done it anyway. And what did I find? Well, I found 1,000,001 ring pulls and bits of metal. But because the site has been seen, so many people from all over the world visit the site. You have campfires there. They maybe have a picnic there. Of course, there's a lot of detritus, a lot of stuff that has fallen into the ground and been trampled into the ground. But it would be great to maybe do a proper one in the future, but it means digging up a lot of holes. And I can see why West Lothian Council may not give permission for that, because it could, you know, the ground would be pretty dug up. But anyway, I've said it, so for if I get into trouble for saying this in your show, so be it.
Yeah, and also we should tell the listeners that there's so much more detail in your book. We've just touched it a little bit here, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's that's why you've got to get as much as you can about it. I mean, there is something else that I've still to put, but it didn't have the room for this book. And that was a lady who I took up, a psychic lady who I took up to, her name is Liz Carmel. She's a very gifted psychic tarot reader. She's a storm chaser. She goes over to America and chases these big storms. And I took her to Decmont Woods one day when she was in Scotland to visit me. And she was getting a lot of stuff from Bob Taylor, the spirit of Bob Taylor as well, about what happened, which I will put out in the next book. And but yeah, so there's still, and I dare say there's still people who will come forward at a later stage and tell me what they saw in the Decmont area, because, you know, since that Decmont Woods book was published, like I say, there were people coming saying, oh yes, my granny saw something in the sky. And so I interviewed the granny. Oh, here, my father saw something. So I interviewed him. And so whilst it would have been great to get all that in the one book, I've now got the opportunity to at least introduce it into UFO Case Files of Scotland, Volume 3, with its own singular chapter. Just like I did, you know, with my Loch Ness book, change the subject there, as I do, I devoted a full chapter in my Loch Ness book to Frank Serrell, the monster hunter, who deceived a lot of people with his fake Nessie photographs. That deserved a full chapter, because I met and interviewed Frank at his base camp in Lower Foyers back in 1982, I think it was. And he shut me down when I spoke about the UFO sighting that he had and the photograph. He refused point blank to talk to me about it. And he says, I'm only here to talk about Nessie, not about UFOs. And yet, his wonderful UFO photograph was printed on in a number of Scottish newspapers. And just to tail off that story, I should say that the photograph that you see in the book and the photograph that he took is very, very similar to the Billy Meyer photographs, a gentleman who faked photographs in near a small village called Hinwall in Switzerland. And but that's another story. Yeah.
I was in Scotland a few years ago. I was at Loch Shiel.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Two RAF fighter jets came over us, and they were seemed just a few feet above the hills as they were tearing past. But it made me wonder when I was reading your book, how often do you think people report from the areas where the RAF fly and they're making a mistake?
Well, I mean, obviously the Scottish Highlands and certain locations in the Highlands are used for low-flying Harrier jets or various military jets. You see that a hell of a lot. It happens all the time. And, I mean, that's just air exercises. They're not chasing UFOs or anything as far as I know. But I've seen it myself, even at Loch Ness. They traverse down the 24 miles of Loch Ness, maybe about, I don't know, 40, 50 feet or more just above the water. It's a sight to behold. It certainly is. It's very, very interesting, yeah.
So do you get any reports of underwater unknown objects?
Well, I know that obviously many other people do, especially some of these English researchers. Paul Sinclair, for instance, has seen a number of these off the coast, these lights under the water. And but in Scotland at the moment, I've not heard of any. And that's not to say there's not any. It's just that they've not come to my attention as yet. Because they call them USOs, unidentified submersible objects, and these consist of a bright, bright white light, or even a bright greenish light, or a yellow light. And people say, well, maybe it's phosphorus or something like this. Some algae is formed under the water surface, which can indeed does happen. I've seen it myself. And you get to know that for what it is. But certainly, if anybody's listening to your show who would like to report one of these USOs, no matter where it is in the UK or even in Europe, whatever, and you know, offshore, get in touch with your good self, Simon, at your podcast.
Do you feel there's a hot spot in Scotland, or could it be that it's just this big areas of Scotland that are sparsely populated? There's just as much activity there, but there's no one to see it.
That's a good point, actually. You know, I mean, obviously, Bonnybridge was a big hot spot back in the day in the 1990s, a small town in Stirlingshire in the central belt of Scotland. That was a book I did before this one, Case Files Scotland 3. It was a Bonnybridge book that I co-wrote with a fellow researcher, Ron Halliday. But yeah, you're right, because, you know, there's certain parts of Scotland which it's just all wilderness, you know. We're up in the north of Scotland and stuff like that, little farm cottages dotted here and there. And if you were, if these off-world craft, call them what you will, wanted to do anything, you would imagine that they're more often to do it there than as opposed over a built-up city. But having said that, we know that they've been seen over built-up cities. But it would be great to get some testimony from folk out in the sticks. I mean, we did that, actually, funnily enough, a few weeks ago. My Stephen Bird, our psychic, he had been in touch with a lady who claimed to see a UFO above these woods near Airdrie. And once you leave Airdrie, it's like you go into the countryside, you know, fields on the left and fields on the right, farmhouse cottage. And she's a nurse, and she was driving back from her work. And it was about 9 o'clock, 10 past nine-ish where are we now? So, yeah, it would have been October, because this is now November, October evening. And suddenly she saw this diamond shape. If you can imagine a diamond in a playing card, you know, that shape, only it was a conglomeration of what appeared to be like light bulbs. Lots of these light bulbs affixed to this diamond-shaped object, which was about 30 feet above this tree line. And again, another forest, funnily enough. And so she was a bit scared at this, because she travels that road on a regular basis and she has never seen the likes of this in her life. Now, the crazy thing is, and this is what I don't understand, Simon, is she says the light that it was thrown off went for at least a quarter of a mile. And yes, it's kind of moorland and that with farmhouses, but so many more people surely must have seen this. So she parked up her car and she was mesmerised by looking at this hovering above the tree line. Now, you know, I've got to tell you as it is, I says, did you take any photographs with your iPhone? Because everybody's got an iPhone. Oh, Malcolm, I just was so mesmerised, I just couldn't do it. And point of fact, I started to get a bit frightened. So I jumped in my car, Malcolm, and I sped away. So what I've done is, with any UFO case, I've sent an email to Police Scotland asking their help to see if any members of the public notified them of this sighting on that date and time. Emails were sent to Prestwick Airport, Glasgow Airport, Edinburgh Airport, Cumbernauld Airport, and asking air traffic controls if they had any air flights. Although I know, we know it doesn't look like an aircraft, but you've got to dot the I's and cross the T's. And at the moment, I'm still waiting back from the airports. I've heard back from the Police Scotland, who requested that I do a Freedom of Information Act instead of just a normal email, which I've now done. I've done a FOIA request to the police, and again, we're waiting on that. But as we know, the wheels of these agencies take a long, long time to turn. You know, you don't get something so quick. It can take ages. So, but that's fine, as long as we get some form of response to that. Needless to say, we also did requests on social media, on Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that, asking you know, people who use these social media sites if they saw anything on the given time at the given date. So that was an interesting one, but it begs the question. It was so bright. It was so bright. So to cut a long story short, we met up with the witness at our home and we drove in Stephen Bird's car to the location, jumped out of the car, and we traipsed through the woods just to see, you know, no cheek, no chance, just to see perhaps if anything was deposited beneath the tree canopy and maybe hit the ground. But there were nothing there that we could see. I mean, there might have not been nothing anyway, but you've got to do these things, Simon. You've got to at least, you know, have a wee nosy about. We couldn't see anything there. So it's unidentified in the truest sense of the word, and we'll wait and see what happens with that one.
I saw a UFO about in the New Forest when I was driving across it. It was early November, and it was about 7 p.m, so it was dark, and there was this big orange ball of light about the size of a car.
Yeah.
Just above a tree. Didn't move an inch the whole time I was looking at it.
Wow.
And it was just a few weeks later, I walked across the New Forest to that tree to see what was there in case there was some kind of, I don't know, building or something that would produce a light like that. But it was nothing. It was just a little bit of wood.
Well, I know. And this is, you've got to just check these things out just for your own curiosity and satisfaction. What I'd like to do, and I shouldn't do this as well, I'm going to give you a couple of spoilers, a couple of cases of another book that I just finished this morning. It'll come out in 2026. I'm going to give you a couple of cases from that, if I may. And earlier this year, I had a Polish and German film crew come out to my home to interview me. After we had completed the filming, we talked shop, you know, we talked about UFOs and everything. And this German guy absolutely knocked me sideways with his story of what happened to him. So I'm going to tell you and your lovely listeners about this. So this is in Hamburg in Germany. I think he said 2017. He woke up and he saw a blue light coming in, you know, all over his kitchen, coming through the hallway. And he went, what the hell is that? What blue light? Is that maybe an emergency vehicle? Maybe an ambulance outside and it's, or a police vehicle and it's lights shining in my kitchen window? I better go and check what this is. So he jumped out of bed, walked down the hallway, and he went into his kitchen, and there, standing, I know it sounds bizarre, there, standing in his kitchen, was this little dwarf-like character with a hood, like one of those monks, you know, you get monks' hoods, the brown thing with. And it had a scrunched-up browny face with heavy folds of skin and menacing eyes. So it wasn't a grey, wasn't your proverbial grey, you know. This was a strange creature, and it was only about 3.5-4 feet tall, and the locked eyes. So this guy says, Malcolm, I says, what the bloody hell are you doing in my house? And he ran towards it and he grabbed it round the neck. Now, this, what I'm about to tell you, is going to sound bizarre, but isn't the subject bizarre anyway? So you're the first person in the world I've told this story to. So what happened next was he grabbed this wee creature around the neck, or what I presume to be the neck, and then suddenly things changed. Because suddenly the head disappeared from his grasp, and in its place, this is where it gets stupid and crazy, in its place was a 1970s football thing. You can imagine a football with a hexagonal wee, you know, in a football, like any football, it's got hexagonal patches, black and white, was suddenly in his arms. This wee being then scurried away and went through a closed door, not an open door, but through a closed door. So he's left with this football thing in his hands, and he was so angry and upset that he couldn't get this wee fella that he threw this football thing down onto the kitchen floor. And as he did so, it absolutely shattered into a million pieces, smaller, smaller pieces, an inch and a half of similar football shapes, you know, hexagonal but tiny, and then they rose slowly up into the air to about his eye level, free floating, these millions of these tiny wee balls that he had smashed in the air, and then he reached to grab them, and it was, he says, Malcolm, it was like soap bubbles. But before they chased into kind of soap bubbles, it was like the texture was like plasticky. And then suddenly they just changed into soap bubbles and were gone. And I says, look, are you sure you wasn't dreaming? It sounds bizarre. He says, Marco, I can assure you 1,000,000%. Something woke me up, not just the light, but something woke me up. And I saw this, as God is my judge, you said, I saw this. Now, it is a bizarre thing. I've never, in the annals of ufology, ever heard something like that, where you grab one of these wee guys, you're left holding this football thing with hexagonal shapes in it, and he throws it down to the ground, it bursts into a million little tinier ones, and free floats up into the air and stops, and then changes into soap bubbles and disappears. The other, so that's going to be in my next book, but that's just the condensed version.
Yeah, okay.
The other one was, I attended Blair Athol Village Hall earlier this year to hear a talk by Dr. David Clark and Giles Stevens and a few others about the Calvine UFO case in 1990. That's when two hillwalkers saw this rhomboid diamond-shaped craft vertically in the sky, and they managed to take a photograph of it. It's caused quite a lot of controversy. So I was there with a good 200 people to hear this talk. And a few months later, Giles, one of the speakers, he emailed me, says, Malcolm, I don't know if you'll be interested in this, but one of the ladies who was at the talk has come forward and says that she saw the same thing when she was a small girl of about 7 years of age, 14 years before the big Calvine sighting in 1990 near Pitlochry. And this is what she said she saw. Now, in my next book coming out next year, she has got a pseudonym. The reason why is she's a weapons analyst for the Army and the Navy, and it's a highly qualified position. That's where she works now. She was a young girl at the time, but she doesn't want a real name disclosed, but she's more than happy to tell the world about what she saw. So what she saw was this. Again, it's in the Calvine area, the very same area as the 1990 sightings. So this was right about 1976, I think she said, 77. And a young girl, she was out playing in the garden, and then suddenly she looked up and she saw the strange craft above her head, and it wasn't making a sound. However, there were something coming down from the bottom of this craft all over her body, and it was like vibrations. You know, if you put your hand against a speaker, when the music coming through, you can hear that vibrations. These vibrations were coming down from beneath this object and moving all over her body. And she goes into detail about what happened, and then the object finally disappeared. Now, Dr. David Clark and Giles Stevens are quite excited, as am I, about this case, because we can ask the question, is it the same UFO 14 years before? Is it a different UFO? Who knows? I mean, the assumption with the Calvine case at the moment from Dr. David Clark and Giles Stevens and others is that it was our tech. In other words, it was our own aircraft that was being moved along the Pitlochry vicinity by a Harrier jump jet. And whether that's true or not, it's open for debate. I.e., is it our own technology? What this strange object was seen in 1990? And I've said on your show before, Simon, you know, not all UFOs are off-world. A lot of them are indeed our own technology. You know, the prototypes are testing drones and this and that and the other. And we've got to be aware of that. So, yeah, there's two stories which will be in my next book, but that's just the briefest of details on them. Thought you'd like these stories.
Yeah, I like those. And the one about the first one is, if you were going to make something up, you'd make something up that's believable. You wouldn't make it so crazy.
I thought that's my very same thought, Simon. I thought that myself. You know, you would think you would go by the same script. Oh, I saw this little grey and this and that and the other. But for to grab this little thing, you know, this goblin-like thing with a hood and it went over his face and over his head. And then you grab it and it melts away and you're left with this football thing. Yeah, if you were going to make something up, but, you know, skeptics will say, well, he didn't go with the flow. In other words, he wanted to make it sound bizarre. So sometimes you can't win. And like I said at the top of the show, we talk to these witnesses. They tell us their stories. We have to try and find out the validity of these stories? Are they just trying to get into a book? Are they trying to make a name for themselves? Are they trying to pull the wool over Malcolm Robinson's eyes? That's my job, to only put stories in the book that I feel are, you know, are true. And I'm not saying that every story in the book is, you know, there might be some that don't pass that test, so to speak. And I can't be sure, of course. Nobody can be sure. With any given book, people, different writers will put sightings in their books, and they may have been deceived themselves. But it's up to writers like myself and others just to make sure that what we do put in our books is the real McCoy, as best as we can.
I wanted to talk to you about Cairn Papal Hill Skywatch.
Oh, yeah.
And what happened there with Stephen Bird. That was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, that was. And I want to also, I forgot time, I don't know how long the show is, but I want to speak about the creature in the tree, the Ann Calder sighting as well. The Stephen Bird, there's a 4,500-year-old burial mound called Cairn Papal Hill, which is a good few miles away from Bathgate, which is the nearest big town in central Scotland. And SBI, that's our group, Strange Phenomena Investigations, we've done a number of sky watches there over the years. And it's, if you can imagine Salisbury Hill, it's like that on top of a hill. And all around, again, imagine Salisbury Hill, all around that is burial pits, circular burial pits that held ancient Pictish manor, whoever it may have been back in the day. And so it's a wonderful place to be. And when you climb up the hill, you go, thank God, I'm at the top of the hill. And then you look and it's you've still got lots to go. There's you're maybe at the top of the plain, at the top of the plateau, so to speak. There's still more to go. Anyway, story goes. So we did a sky watch there, and Stephen Bird, your psychic, was looking a wee bit iffy, and I went, you okay? Do you not see them, Malcolm? See what? Over there. And he pointed to this location where the land dips away. And I says, Stephen, nope, I can't see nothing, my friend. And he says, well, what I'm seeing, it's in my third eye, what I'm seeing is some UFO craft and two small alien beings. Now, I never saw a thing, but that's like, you know, cats and dogs hear and see things that we don't see, humans, you know. The dogs will bark in a haunted house at nothing. What are they barking at? Their hearing of animals are different. Now, okay, that's animals. But we psychics, a psychic is seeing into a different spectrum. They're seeing things, they're hearing things, they're getting information that you and I won't readily get. So I couldn't see it, but you know what, Simon? If he said he saw that, by God, he saw that. And then suddenly he went, they're wanting to talk to me. They're taking me over and they're using my voice. And he started to talk about why these were here. I think he said something like they've been here for 3,000 to 4,000 years. I can't quite recall. It's in the book. And that they're scientists and they're trying to, you know, tell the leaders of this world that the folly of their ways, you know, okay, it's a thing we've heard many times before. And but they're not here to do any harm. Now, the beings that Stephen Bird saw, and there is a drawing of these two beings in my book, UFO Case Files, Volume 3, and they are not your conventional greys. They are not anything that's probably been seen in UFO lore before. They look very, very different, you know, and I wish if this was a video, we could have had some pictures up. So buy the books, folks, buy the book. And you know, and he started to, after about a period of 9-10 minutes, he started to sway, and I had to catch him because he was going to fall, you know, and he came out of that. Now, none of us could believe what we were hearing. Now, admittedly, it was only myself and another lady who was at the Skywatch, and Margaret Tolan, I believe her name is. We were standing next to him as he was imparting all this information. So what I did for the book was to transcribe from the audio tape what he was saying. And so that's in the book as well, you know. Yeah, very, very bizarre, very bizarre.
Yeah. Was there somebody who had some kind of app on their phone that took a picture?
Yeah, I don't... Yeah, there was. This chap's got this app, and allegedly it's like all these devices you get for ghost hunting and all that. Only this app was to do with going into the spectrum and trying to pull out faces or shapes or that. And he took several photographs of the night, one of which resembled one of these beings. But I'm not a big fan of these apps, you know, because the producers of these apps that you can get, these ghostly apps, but, you know, I think they're kind of preset to do that, you know. The same way the spirit box and all that, it's like a transistor radio. It's all jumbled noise and you get intermittent whines and bits of speech and everything. And what did he say? Was it Harry? Was that Harry the name? And so you say to yourself, well, it could have just been a part of a radio broadcast. So I don't know. I put it in the book anyway about the guy with this app. And incredibly, Stephen Bird did say that that photograph that he took with this through his iPhone with his app looked very, very similar to one of these creatures. Yeah.
We're talking about the book UFO Case Files of Scotland, Volume 3. But can you tell the listeners about your other books?
Yeah, the one you just mentioned is the 14th book. Just this morning, I completed Testimonies of the Supernatural. It may change that title, possibly, to Testimonies of UFOs and the Unexplained. That is finished as far as that, you know, there are no more UFO cases or paranormal cases to go into. It's just a read-through for spelling and grammar. That will come out next year. Prior to that, to answer your question, the other books I've written about, the books on Nessie, which is my favourite of all books I've written, The Monsters of Loch Ness. Again, all these books are available on Amazon. Then we have a very bizarre and horrendous case from Ireland, a book that I solely wrote on this Irish family called Please Leave Us Alone. This family was besieged by horrible entities in their house, UFO sightings above their house, etc. We have Paranormal Case Files of Great Britain, Volumes 1, 2, 3 and 4. Again, cataloguing all the weirdness in the United Kingdom. We have, as we mentioned earlier, the Decmont Woods UFO case, which is the forestry worker Robert Taylor. We have Scotland's first reported UFO abduction, and that book is called The A70 UFO Incident, which happened to Gary Wood and Colin Wright. And we have the Falkland Hill UFO incident, which was, well, probably a very controversial Scottish case, very bizarre. And I just tell it as it is, you know. And yeah, what else have we got? So yeah, it's a combination of ghosts, UFOs, Nessie and stuff. And you don't make money out of books, Simon. You know, people will say, oh, you're writing books just to get a few pennies in your back pocket. Not at all. You ask any author, you know, you don't make money out of these books, unless maybe you're Whitley Strieber or somebody like that, a well-known author. But for guys like me, it's a pittance. We do it out of love, not for money. We do it out of love, and to get these stories out to people like your good self, Simon, and to share the knowledge and share the stories. And people can take it or leave it, you know, Simon. They can say, what, oh, they're rubbish. That's fine, because let us not forget, when I started off my journey, I was a total sceptic. What a load of nonsense UFOs are. What a load of nonsense ghosts and poltergeists are. I'm going to show the world that that's a load of rubbish. That was in 79. And as you go through the years, in the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, you speak to people and you see the weight of evidence, you go, oh my God, Christ almighty, no way, whoa, wait. This is something serious here, you know, and your ideology and your thought patterns, and you soon begin to realise that these things are real. These things do happen. People do see these things. Yes, you've got to question the validity of any case. You know, are you on medication, Mr. Smith? Are you hallucinating, Mr. Smith? And we have to query everything that we do. But in the main, I would not be involved in this subject that I have been for coming up to 50 years now. Yes, I'm an old person. I would not be in this subject if I honestly if I honestly didn't believe that we're dealing with something real, something tangible. Now, yes, there is some nonsense out there on the internet and this and that. Now, of course there is. Of course there is. But it's like a big sieve. Once you move that big sieve with a grill and get rid of the rubbish, let all that rubbish fall through. And what will not fall through that wire mesh is the nuggets of ufologies, the nuggets of the paranormal that it keeps me on track. It keeps me investigating the subject as I am doing so today.
Do you have a website?
I don't actually have a website, no. People say they're astonished at that. Why doesn't Malcolm Robinson not have a website? All Malcolm Robinson has is a Facebook site. I don't even have a Twitter account because I haven't got the time to go into Twitter and do this and do that. So I keep everything on the Facebook site. And so, you know, people would need to search on the internet for Malcolm Robinson. Admittedly, like anybody else, there are a lot of Jim Jones, there are a lot of Malcolm Robinsons, there are a lot of Harry this, and people have the same name as you. But if anybody wants to search for me, Malcolm Robinson, the small picture is myself next to an alien grey face. So that's the one you'd be looking for if you're trying to find me on Facebook.
Great. Well, thanks again for coming back to the podcast.
Simon, it's always a pleasure to be on your show. You're a wonderful host, you're a wonderful gentleman, and you're doing a grand job yourself. You're letting the listeners know what's out there. So fair play to you, my friend. You're doing a great job.
Thanks a lot. That was an interview with Malcolm Robinson about his book, UFO Case Files of Scotland, Volume 3. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can get a 7-day free trial. Now please check out my book. It's called Verified Near-Death Experiences, and it's on Amazon. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.